Speaker Jack L.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jack L., and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank my good friend Bernie for inviting me to participate in the meeting with you tonight and to congratulate those of you who celebrated various lengths of sobriety and to welcome those of you who are new. It's not an easy thing to be new. And one of the reasons I'm very grateful that I get to get up here from now and then and talk about how my life was and what it's about today is because otherwise I might forget just what being new feels like. And talking to people who are new is very helpful. And if you're feeling very uncomfortable tonight and you don't really even want to be here, then I would suggest to you that you're going about this thing the right way. Because that's exactly how I felt when I got here. Nothing frightens me more. And when I'm talking to somebody who's new, I'll second to that, nothing frightens me more. In this day of unexpected, these days of unexpected assassination. Nothing frightens me more than when I'm talking to a newcomer who tells me at the end of about 2 weeks that he loves everybody, that his life has never been more fabulous, and that why didn't he discover this before, because now he knows he's got it made. And, you know, that kind of a newcomer is a little scary to me. Said another way, it's you miserable ones that are going to make it. Because Alcoholics Anonymous is not the kind of a place that I was inclined to go to unless I was miserable. I didn't come here happy. I didn't come here happy, and consequently when I walked into rooms like this and people came up to me and offered me their business cards and their good wishes, their smiles, I felt very uncomfortable, and I wanted them to get away from me. And as a matter of fact, sometimes I felt so uncomfortable and so ungrateful when people gave me their phone numbers and their cards, I would go to other meetings and pass out those cards to newcomers. And assure them that there were people who sincerely wanted them to call day or night. And from what I gathered, most of those people had the swing shift, so late night was better. A lot of people here tonight that I know, those of you who have, you know, had to sit through one of my talks before, my heartiest apologies. If you were to get up and leave now, I would not be offended, and if you believe that, you don't know anything about alcoholic resentment. There are people I know. There are people from all walks of my past life, from Alcoholics Anonymous, or there are people here who go to regular meetings that I attend. There's a couple of people here that I just met last night. There are people here who I have known for most of the 14 years that I have been sober. There are people here from out of town. People here who've moved here from out of state, and people that I have seen at malls, grocery stores. And the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is that all of these people have all gathered here in this room tonight with one common purpose: to viciously judge and evaluate everything. I I really related to what Roy said about having an inclination to screw up his life before he got here, except for the part that it was just before he got here. I have a tendency to do that since I've been here, from time to time. But I can honestly say it's so far it's been a very good year for me. I haven't had my guts wrenched with anger this year, which I am very grateful for. Haven't had a moment like that. I haven't had a moment where I bolted upright in the middle of the night feeling remorse or felt nauseated due to fear or insecurity. I haven't had a moment like that this year. I haven't blubbered all year or whimpered or screamed at someone because they weren't doing something my way. It's really nice not to be in a relationship. Very small town in Central California, and my parents were from another country, and I was ashamed of them. And my whole time that I was growing up, I was ashamed of my parents. They had accents, they dressed a little funny, and they had customs from the old country, and I felt very uncomfortable about that. I didn't want them to come to the family night at school, and I wanted to get away from that environment as quickly as I possibly could. And so when I was 17 years old, I came down here to Los Angeles. And I didn't want to be thought of as a foreigner. And when I got down here, I would have certain members of my family, my brothers, come and visit me from time to time. And I can remember on one occasion, I was introducing my brother to a friend that I'd made here in Southern California, and as I was introducing him, I was thinking to myself, my God, this guy looks so foreign. And then I completed introducing him, and he said hello to the guy I introduced him to, and then the guy that I introduced him to turned to me and he said, Jack, your brother's a spitting image of you. And so I didn't invite my brothers down to visit me anymore because I didn't want them blowing my cover. I wanted to think of myself as a different kind of a person than I am. Maybe a Steve McQueen kind of a guy. You know, blonde, blue-eyed, take charge kind of a guy. And that's the way I wanted to come at life when I got down here to Los Angeles. And I really had a problem whenever anybody talked to me as if I was different. And I can remember people coming up to me from time to time when I was first here and saying, I had a mustache at the time, and they would say, hey, you know, you kind of remind me of a celebrity. And I thought to myself, yeah, Steve McQueen. And then they'd say, Omar Sharif. And, if you don't want to be thought of as foreign, you don't want anybody calling you Omar. And after I was around Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, I remember I was in the Pacific group for about 6 years. When I first went over there, they do a lot of handshaking and everything. And somebody came up to me and, kind of did a double take on me and said, hey, you remind me of a celebrity. Let's see. And I thought, yeah, Omar Sharif. And the guy said, Liberace. And I remember thinking, Oh, God, don't let me, why don't you let me be Omar Sharif again, for God's sake? But I'm here tonight because I had a very long and hearty love affair with alcohol. And why shouldn't I? Because alcohol offered me the one thing that I didn't seem to be able to get in any other facet or department in my life. It seemed to make me feel okay. And why would I give up anything that was that potent? I wouldn't. I wouldn't give it up. And because it was so potent, and because it was magic for me, and because I could rely upon it at any given moment, and because I knew that any time I had any anxiety in my life, or that I had any frustration or any fear, that my palms were sweating or that my heart was beating quickly, that all I had to do was to get to where there was a drink and I'd be okay. I'd be okay. I knew that. And that was a very, very secure thing to know. And of course, knowing that, I would have a well-stocked supply of alcohol at all times. And I wouldn't wait until I got anywhere near having no alcohol before I went out and restocked. I tell you something, even today, because I work at home a lot, even today when I'm feeling kind of down, and I need to get out of the apartment because it's, if you're of my type of alcoholic, it's not a good idea to sit there with the drapes closed listening to the hum of the refrigerator. What I have been known to do, because I live very close, is I like to go over to Trader Joe's. Because there's a feeling I get over there surrounded by wine that is like no other feeling that I know. And that's the feeling that I got when I drank alcohol. And the problem, unfortunately, was that when I took a drink of alcohol, my focus changed. All of that which was truly important in my life was no longer important that quickly. And the trivialities of my life suddenly took on a vital importance. You know, when I drank alcohol, it was only really when I drank alcohol that I was capable, for instance, of getting into a three-hour argument with my girlfriend's five-year-old. I wouldn't do that sober. I wouldn't do that sober and feel right while I was doing it. And once I had that first drink, well, all I cared about was the next drink. I mean, that's all I cared about. And it didn't matter where I was. And I would trade in my loved ones for that drink. And I would trade in my job. And I would trade in anything that was important to me. Because it simply didn't measure up to what alcohol made me feel like. And so I can't ever understand when we talk about the war on drugs and talk about how we're going to try to win the war on drugs. And I think that's just a silly and absurd idea. Because the only way to win a war on drugs, the only way you could have ever won the war on drugs with me would be to convince me that taking a drink of alcohol was bad when I knew different. You'd have to talk me out of taking a drink of alcohol in order to win the war on drugs. And how can you talk somebody out of that which is their very sustenance, that which is valid, that which makes them feel competent and adequate as it did for me? You don't. And that's why I suppose it's a spiritual program, because no logic got me to Alcoholics Anonymous and has kept me here for over 14 years. I don't know what has kept me here. I can't stand up here and tell you how to stay sober or get sober. I'm not here to do that. I might be able to tell you a little something about how to avoid hating yourself. Because I notice that whenever I get into any kind of self-loathing, I start to take self-destructive action. And if I hurt you, that's self-destructive. And so I try to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous. Luckily, when I first got here, that were designed to make me feel good about myself as opposed to hating myself, which I always did. And the silly thing about those things that I was taught to do that make me feel decent about myself are not particularly pleasant. And it's like dieting. I mean, you never get skinny by doing anything pleasant. And I've had to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous that were, for lack of a better word, dreary. There isn't anything exciting about taking a self-obsessed newcomer over to the side and talking to him. You know, and yet in Alcoholics Anonymous, we attest to doing that when you're feeling terrible. There are things that we do in AA when you're feeling terrible that work, that supposedly take your mind off of your own problems. And one of the ones that we advocate is to take a newcomer aside and talk. And you know, I don't know that always works, but I can tell you one time I was over to Ohio Street and it was really packed over there, and I was just feeling really crazy, really crazy. And it was because that group that I had become very familiar with out in the world was completely focused on me, the anti-Jack squad. Was out in full force, and so I was feeling terrible. And I went into the Ohio Street meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was very crowded, even more crowded than this meeting. You could barely move around at all. And I thought, you know, what do they say now? I've been here 9 years, or something about talking to a newcomer to feel better. Well, I guess I'll try it. And I looked around, I saw some guy sweating bullets, and I took him aside and I said, "Hi, I'm Jack, how are you tonight?" You know, it wasn't easy to do that when you're thinking about your own stuff, and he hadn't said more than one sentence. He was very close. Well, the first mistake that he made was he broke the social distance between us. He stepped too close to me. And inside of his first sentence, a little tiny bit of spit flew out of his mouth and landed on my lip. Now, I did not want to offend them, because we don't want to repel newcomers. That's not what this is all about. So I stood there and I was thinking to myself, I can't rub this off. Because if I do that, it's going to go into my lip. I'm going to have to dab it off. And soon. And then I thought, oh, that's crazy. What am I doing? This is exactly the kind of thinking that causes me problems. I got to get back to listening to what this newcomer is saying, whatever that is. So I refocused on him, and I just was able to catch the last part of his sentence. He's saying that he'd just gotten over a bout of hepatitis. But in a way, the notion of talking to a newcomer worked, because I had so much resentment toward that guy, I forgot about what my problems were. If you're new and you're feeling, there's got to be somebody in this room, and not just one, and it doesn't have to be new. You could be old and fading away here. And you could be sitting on some heavyweight, genuine, first-class pain. and I'm sure there's somebody in this room tonight that's feeling that way. As a matter of fact, when I first got up here, and I, you know, maybe it's my 14 years, but I sensed a relationship disorder in the room someplace. But it's gonna be okay, you know. You're not the only one who's feeling bad. You know, this is about going up and down and up and down. Life did not stop after I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and all of the things that it deals to each and every one of us at a given time were still being dealt to me. And I have felt terrible as recently as just a few months ago. You know, and sometimes you don't know how bad you feel. Sometimes you just don't know. Or maybe you're not willing to admit it. You know, I'm certainly not. I usually talk about how bad things were, you know, after they're over, because I don't seem to want to get into them when they're that way. But I remember I was at the Dickens meeting. A lot of you know me from over there. And I, well, some months ago, and I was walking home from the Dickens meeting. They had not yet restored the Hamburger Hamlet over there, and I was walking home, as I always do after the meeting, and as I rounded the Hamburger Hamlet, there was a guy sitting up against that building there, a homeless guy, and he had, you know, I saw him there, and he had very deep lines of depression in his face, and his hair was matted and dirty, and his clothes were tattered, and he had some, like, newspapers tied around his feet, and, you know, very, very tough look to his eyes, and he had evidence of having peed on himself, and I saw this guy sitting there. And as I walked up to him, our eyes met, and he looked at me and he said, "Hey, cheer up." As we do around here, I guess I started chuckling about it, and I actually went back there and just talked to the guy for a few minutes, you know, because he was able to see something that I wasn't. And obviously, if he could be in that condition and he could be in a better mood than me, then I must be doing something wrong. And I was grateful for that moment. So I have my ups and downs in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's one of the reasons I need to keep coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, earlier, when I got up here, I said that I was grateful to my friend Bernie for asking me to participate in this meeting, and that's a very well-chosen word for me, because I like to think that I participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether I'm at the podium or not. I like to participate in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I attend, and sometimes the way that I participate is to simply be in my seat and not disrupt a meeting. To stay for the entire meeting. To talk to other people when I get here. That might be how I participate. I participate in my Friday night meeting every Friday night by putting away chairs. I have for 8 or 9 years now. I have what we call commitments at certain meetings, and that's participating in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's participating in Alcoholics Anonymous when somebody gets up here and takes a birthday cake. I'm participating because I'm singing happy birthday. And I have to do that, because if I don't sing happy birthday, who will? Well, it's going to be the guy next to me. It's going to be that person over there, or that person. It's got to be me. You know, and when somebody says their name, I say, "Hi, so-and-so." It doesn't matter how I feel. That's how I was taught. And that's participating in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I don't say that, then who will? If I don't thank the speaker, who will? And I need to do that. And those are some of the dreary things that I have learned to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, because my first sponsor here in AA taught me and taught me well. He told me that regardless of how my life was going, regardless of what was going on, that I was a battleship in peacetime, and that I had to maintain the drills on my ship, because the war would be coming, as war always does in life, and that I can't just do the drills during the war, that I gotta do them when I'm feeling good. And that's the dreary part, because I'm the kind of a guy who, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was willing to do anything. You know how many newcomers I've talked to? Geez, Jack, I really need to get this thing. I'm ready to do anything. I'm surrendered. And I say, okay, go up to the secretary over there and tell him you want a commitment. They say, well, wait a second. Do I have to? Yeah, it's almost as if people can come in and say, what can I do to stop drinking short of staying sober? Can you help me with that? I remember Don G. one time told me that he was in Texas, and there was a sign up on one of the meeting walls there, and it said, he said at the time he thought it was stupid, but that he has come to believe it's one of the greatest signs he's ever seen. You'd really hate me now if I didn't tell you, right? What the sign said was, if you want to stop drinking, you're going to have to stop drinking. That may not mean something to some of you, but it sure meant something to me when he told me. You ever have people get up? Everybody's got their own taste in speakers, I suppose. And I heard a guy the other night, he got up and said, I was an animal out there. There's an animal out there. What does that mean? What does that? I've heard that so many times. It almost sounds like a bad rap to animals when you say something like that. Because I have never seen a golden retriever climbing out of a married woman's window pulling on his pants. No animal has ever done the kinds of things that I do when I drink alcohol. Because the kinds of things that I did when I drank alcohol made me ashamed, filled me with remorse. Very uncomfortable to be filled with remorse. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. Some of you might feel that way sometimes if you're new. Or have felt that way. I'm here to tell you, you don't have to feel that way anymore. Because getting sober isn't necessarily going to make me happy. But for the first time in my life, in the last 14 years, the whole 14 years, I have been eligible to be happy. And I never was before. Never was before I got here. Because how can I be eligible to be happy if there isn't any me, if I'm clouded, if I'm drunk, if I'm not on the planet, if everything that I'm doing and saying is centered around getting a drink, is centered around conning other people. Sometimes we say to newcomers that we came here as liars, cheats, thieves, and whores. Or just liars and cheats, Take offense. But I ask, how could you, if you did the kind of drinking that it takes to get here, you gotta lie. I had to lie about my drinking. If the only way that I could get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and sometimes I wish this was the way, was because of eyewitness testimony. That people step forward and testify that I should be here. But that's not how it works. It comes around to me, the defendant, eventually copping to the crime. And I think currently we all know how tough that can be, right? A lot of the things I did when I drank, I didn't even know that I did. That's called a blackout. It's called a blackout. If you don't know what a blackout is, it's simply being so gone, so ineligible to be happy, that you are not conscious of what you are doing. Somebody has to tell you what you did. Some people lose hours that way. There have been people in Alcoholics Anonymous who said they lost 1973. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard it many times. Once I had, when I was drinking and I was married, and my stepdaughter came over. She was about 14 years old, and she looked at her mother and said, "You know, any way that I could taste a margarita?" And I was off the sauce. I had sworn off the sauce. And she said, "Any way I could taste a margarita?" And my wife, of course, resisted that request. After all, she was only 14, my stepdaughter. But I spoke up on her behalf. And I said to my wife, "Look, you know, don't you see, how can you ward off evil if you don't even know what evil is? You gotta know what it is. So, let's make a batch." And we made a batch of margaritas, and my stepdaughter took a couple of sips, and yeah, that's interesting, and then I drank the rest. And the rest of my story in regard to those margaritas is from eyewitness testimony. I did not know this. It was told to me the next day that what had occurred in the middle of the night was there was a loud crash in the middle of our home in the living room, which had hardwood floors. And my wife and my stepdaughter came running out of their respective bedrooms. And what had happened was that I had taken a large television set that was sitting on a table about a foot and a half high, grabbed it from behind, yanked it up, and it had gone face down and crashed onto the hardwood floor. And the reason that it did that is because I thought it was the lid of the toilet. And so when my family stormed into the living room, I am told that I was standing in a particular position. "Hey, can I get some privacy around here?" And peed right into the guts of the TV. Now, if you're one of those animal drinkers, you may think that that is a wimpy story. But let me remind you, if water is a conductor of electricity, I could have been seriously injured. Yeah, how many stories like that do I have? Well, plenty. Plenty. They all turn out the same way. I wake up the next morning and I cringe. I cringe if I remember what I did. I cringe if somebody told me what I did. And I am inclined, after I find out what I did or somebody tells me what I did, to stay away from that somebody, because I don't want to look them in the face. And they're just another expendable friend. I am willing to swap an expendable friend for my right to consume alcohol and act in a way that makes me ashamed and makes me filled with self-loathing. That's what alcohol has done for me. I've known a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have gone out and drank, but I'll tell you, I haven't been in the clinches with any of them. One of my closest friends went out about 10 years ago, but I was out of the country, and I got a letter from her telling me that she went out. I didn't see her for months after that, and thank God she's back. And she's been back for about 11 years. But I have recently had somebody in my life with double-digit sobriety who has, over the slow process of deterioration, finally gotten drunk. And he said to me, "You can't imagine what it's like trying to get back to AA." And I said, "I think I can imagine. I don't know what it's like, but I can most definitely imagine. Because that is one of the deterrents for me, is to be able to imagine what it must be like to try and come back into Alcoholics Anonymous after double-digit sobriety." And I suggested to him that the best thing that I could offer him, because he was resisting coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's very uncomfortable, a lot of different attitudes that one probably experiences when they come in to a room of familiar faces. There's a certain betrayal in somebody going out and getting drunk, I'm sure, among some people. And I suggested to him that perhaps I could pair him up with someone who had had double-digit sobriety, a man, gone out, come back, and now gotten some substantial sobriety, say 7 or 8 or 9 years minimum, you know, nice stretch of time. And that perhaps that person could offer something to this guy that I know. And he wasn't too enthused about the idea, but I thought in the back of my head I'd still find the person, get their phone number, or maybe get a couple of people and have them ready and ready to talk to this guy. Have them briefed and ready to talk to this guy. And I have, you know, I go to a lot of meetings of AA. I go to meetings a lot of different places in AA. I talk to a lot of people that have been around AA for 25, 30 years sometimes. I haven't found anybody. Now that is amazing to me, and it may not even be accurate. But I'm telling you that I have made a conscious effort to locate someone as I have described. And I have not found anybody. Now, there's probably got to be somebody, but I was amazed. I know this woman, but I was looking for a man. So that scared me. That really scared me. Now, I don't like to play around with my sobriety. I really don't. I got this thing back in Texas about a few years back. I was in Texas for a while going to meetings there, and then they didn't give cakes. They gave these medallions. You've probably seen these things. You know, we drill holes in them sometimes, hang them around people's necks. It's certainly not a precious metal, we know that. I thought, you know, because I'm the kind of guy who empties my pockets at night, throws them on the dresser, and this thing usually goes on the dresser along with the other things, the wallet, the change, the keys. I got to thinking, if somebody broke in here, you know, and just could take one item of value, would take the most valuable item, and he knew anything at all about precious metal, it wouldn't be this. And he would be dead wrong to not think that this was the most valuable thing in that room, because it is. It is to me. This is something that I am very, very grateful to have. This represents my sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's something that did not come easy, and yet it came very easy, because I'm lucky. I didn't have anything to do with it. That's how I know there's a higher power in my life, because I'm sober. I tried to get that way many, many, many times in my life, and I never made it. I don't want to give this up for anything, because I know nothing else works when I don't have this anymore. Nothing. This makes me eligible to be happy. And if I take a drink of alcohol, I'm going to be where my friend is. And I assure you, that is hell and back. So I suggest to you, if you're new, give this thing a try. Take some faith. It certainly doesn't look like it's going to help out right now, perhaps. But give it another try. And you know, if I haven't done anything else for you, I hope you'll come back to another meeting tomorrow night. And those of you who get disillusioned from time to time with the dreariness of Alcoholics Anonymous, those of you who bend the rules of Alcoholics Anonymous and take the shortcuts, like my friend did, I strongly suggest to you that you think about Alcoholics Anonymous as I do. The best thing that ever happened in my life. Thanks.